You'd be surprised at how easy it is to disappear when you don't comment on things. You're not that active in chat. You hide behind, you know, your photo on Zoom. You can be invisible pretty quickly.
Are you new to working from home? Maybe you're figuring out how to manage a distributed team. Are you homeschooling your kids while trying to get something, anything else done? You've come to the right place. Work Life at Home talks with both newbies and experts as we explore the tools, tips, and techniques that will help you make the most of this new way of working. I'm Josh Freeman. Welcome home. When you work remotely, it's easy to lose visibility. We're human beings, and FaceTime has always been an important part of our communication and of building relationships. Now, we're stuck in this weird limbo of Zoom calls and emails, and it's harder to have an impact on your organization. It's harder to bond with your boss and your coworkers. It's harder to get noticed and valued, but not impossible. My guest is Leah Ryder, who's written a lot about working remotely and about this issue in particular. Leah's the brand and content marketing lead at Trello. Her team manages 5 blogs, all their social media, quarterly cross-team campaigns, community engagement, and copywriting for this project and task management service that has 35 million registered users. And just because she doesn't have enough going on, Leah also writes and publishes her own newsletter called Write Work about women in content marketing. Leah, welcome to Work Life at Home.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Sure. So let's jump right into this question of being more visible as a remote worker. What got you interested in the issue and how big a problem is it?
Yeah, I became interested in this for personal reasons. I've been working remotely for 7 years with an asterisk. So In that 7 years, I spent 1 year back in an office, quickly realized working from home was for me and went back to it. And when you start to work remotely for a long period of time, obviously that starts factoring in your career progression. So We think about, how am I going to get promoted? What's next for me? What is the next role I want to fill? And all of a sudden, all of these questions started popping up for myself. Now I'm a manager, so I am now concerned with career progression for people that are on my team. So it's now also become part of my job.
I guess it's a huge problem for people who are kind of competing with coworkers, but probably just for anybody who's working remotely. And what have you heard from other people about their concerns about this?
I think what's interesting, particularly in my experience, I've been working in what's called a hybrid work model, where some people work from home and some people are co-located in an office. And in fact, we have offices in multiple countries, and then we have remote workers in multiple countries. So that distributed net of folks really does change and affect each person's perspective. So what I see on my screen is my office looks very different from my coworkers in New York, San Francisco, in Sydney, Australia. And that's what really brought it forward to me, that everybody has a different perspective of this and everybody's struggling with it in their own right. Particularly in the last year with the pandemic and everybody working from home, I think this has gotten only more aggravated. We've seen consistent research over the years about the top pain points of remote workers, generally being struggling with loneliness, collaboration issues, FaceTime with managers. But now we're seeing another depth into that research because people aren't investing in it, which is really nice. I was actually just looking at a study from Hayes Recruiting. They looked at equality, diversity, and inclusion, and they found that over half of employees are now concerned about their career progression now that they're working remotely. But the interesting component of that is that director-level professionals or employers less than 30% are worried about career progression. So I think in particular, it's people that are not managers that have more stake in the game, have a longer career path ahead of them. That's where I see the most pain at this point.
That makes complete sense. So you use a couple of terms that are interesting in the article. You used being visible, which right now sounds like you can only do that on Zoom, although I think you mean something much broader than that, and perceived proximity. And how do you define those and how do you deal with those?
Sure. Yeah. I'm a content marketer, so I love the dictionary. And visible in particular has a really interesting dichotomy of definitions. So we think about Zoom, being visible physically, being perceptible to the eye. That is the first definition. And that's very important in our careers, which I'm excited to tell you more about shortly.
Good.
The other side of visibility for human nature, it's actually a social construct. It's the state of being publicly acknowledged or known. So we think of someone who's visible in the public, like a celebrity or politician.
But everybody needs a little of that, is the point, right? Everybody wants to be seen, quote unquote.
Everybody wants to be seen. We actually, as a culture and a society, celebrate the act of becoming more seen. Mm-hmm. We hold up people who open their lives up to be seen. So it's actually, we assign a lot of social equity to visibility.
That's interesting because it kind of leads into this idea of risk taking, which if you're seen, part of that is your willingness to be seen, to be visible, to take a risk and step out a little bit. And when you do that, you get acknowledged typically. So how does that relate to the people that you're talking about? Sort of this idea of needing to do something that makes you stand out. What kinds of things should people be thinking about?
Yeah. So when we talk about visibility, particularly at work, this is about being included, being recognized, being valued by networks within your organization. Getting included in projects and teams gives you a chance to get recognized. Being recognized for your successes gives you a chance to be valued, gives you a chance to be promoted. So that's why visibility becomes a really important piece of the workplace. However, we take it for granted in co-located scenarios. And I think that's why we don't talk about it so much, or we haven't talked about it a lot in the past. Mm-hmm. FaceTime is what researchers kind of label as that factor that helps us interact, communicate, and build trust between us, mm-hmm. particularly in the workplace. So your boss comes in the morning and sees you at your desk. You're already there. He or she leaves in the evening. You're still there. Your boss is walking down the hallway and is thinking, I need someone for this project. And you just happen to walk by. So they pull you into the conference room and ask you to get started. All of those moments create FaceTime, which have been proven to have an impact on your career progression.
Right.
So you're sitting at your office. I'm sitting at mine. We can't see each other. How do you know as a boss that I'm here in the morning? How do you know I'm staying late at night? How do you think of me when you need me for a project?
It's tough. And what's interesting is statistically, people who work at home work longer hours. They put more time in, which is so weird because one of the things I've heard a lot is that managers are concerned about, well, how do I know they're working? And it's like, well, the way you know they're working is they get their work done. That's part of it. But there is that thing of almost an inherent mistrust in the idea that somebody's working from home, especially if you're not. And it feels like, well, they're just lucky or they're just flaky or they're just goofing off or, you know, working in their pajamas or whatever their thing is. And it's something that you have to compensate for consciously.
Exactly. And with, let's say, people in positions of leadership in particular are facing two biases. So the first one is our human bias towards being physically visible. We're creatures who depend on our eyes. So physical FaceTime or seeing faces is a large component about how we read people, how we remember them, how we build connections with them. The second bias is what I just had mentioned with that Hayes research study, is that when you've already progressed enough in your career, you're not as worried about it. So it's not as top of mind for you. And I think the combination of those two biases in a remote work environment, especially when most of us are now working remotely, can create some issues.
So how do you get to perceived proximity?
Yes, I'm going to dive into two research studies that I want to use to connect the dots here.
Great.
So the first one was published last year in 2019. The title is kind of telling. The title is Get Noticed and Die Trying: Signals, Sacrifice, and the Production of FaceTime in Distributed Work.
Ooh.
So this is by researchers Ioana Cristea and Paul Leonardi. And they talk about the sacrifice behind the signals. So they do spend a bit of time, as I've already covered, about how important FaceTime or being observed by others at work creates positive impacts on people's careers. People get better work assignments, more career advancement. When you're remote, you need to compensate with other behaviors to achieve the same results with that lack of FaceTime. And that becomes a sacrifice, as they call it, because you need to do things, or you feel you need to do things like work overtime. You need to sacrifice personal commitments to always be on. You need to produce more written work, which takes longer. It's harder.
But are those things true? Do you actually need to do all those things?
This is where I wanted to pull in the other study. And this is where I argue that it's not true. I also have been very fortunate to experience this with my remote work at Trello. So I can vouch for this in two ways. And the first will be research, and the second will be some real world experience. But
great.
With this secondary report, then we get into the concept of perceived proximity. I guess I could ask you this. Do you have family or friends that live across the country?
Of course. Around the world, in fact.
Around the world. Do you do you feel close to them, even though you might not have seen them for the last year?
Sure.
So the reason that you feel that way is because you've built up perceived proximity. The concept is that the perception of connection can overcome distance, which is kind of why we feel closer to someone who lives, our friend who lives in Europe, than we might feel to our next door neighbor who we see once a week. We see them more, but we feel less connected.
Right.
So there's a work that happens when you're communicating the right signals. And when you communicate the right signals, you build up a perceived proximity that really helps transcend time and space. And that creates a strong, effective relationship that gives a team and a boss-employee relationship strength to transcend needing to see them to remember them.
Yeah.
It's like kind of dense, but I feel like it's important to lay it out.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
So there are five signals that they outline in being really important for perceived proximity. And they use big words, but I think it really comes down to a few key things. Mm-hmm. So they talk about dependability. So just being someone that is there when they say they're going to be there is really important.
Right.
Reliability. So being able to deliver on time, deliver results when asked. Accessibility. And this is really important during working hours or an agreed upon accessibility. Likeability. So you want to like the people you work with. And then informality, interestingly. So breaking down those professional barriers and being able to connect as people is really important.
Right. Those are great starting points for this stuff. And I can see how they relate to the way you feel about a family member, because all of those things are true for people who care about you and who you care about. Let me ask you a question. This thing, this idea to some people can feel very artificial and structured, like overly conscious. Is that something that people can find a way to get over? Is it something you've encountered? What do you think about that?
I completely understand. As I was building this framework, even I myself was thinking, will people think I'm asking them to engineer relationships in their workday, which sounds kind of strange.
Yeah.
But I think the fact is that remote work has some inherent challenges that need to be tackled. When you're insistent about tackling them, which might feel like you're planning to try and make our interactions better, you're assuring that some of those biases that I mentioned are absolutely tackled and not going to be part of the problem. It's harder to interpret emotions over just like in a text message. Mm-hmm. So there needs to be some kind of basis of communication charter. Another term that people use are cultural norms. Mm-hmm. Those need to be outlined in order for people to have a sense of what's okay, what's not okay within a team. And I think because we're all distributed, sometimes it just needs a little bit of more work at the outset. The hope is that with kind of a group establishment of these guidelines and then with some practice, it stops feeling engineered and just becomes the guardrails for appropriate collaboration.
And I assume it also helps if both the manager and the employee are aware of these things.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I think a framework like the visibility framework, which I've built, can actually help give some guidance to that relationship and to those conversations that you have, so that it gives some terminology to use when you're trying to explain how you feel. I don't feel supported enough. I don't feel like I've been given enough strategic opportunity. I'm feeling isolated socially from the team. It just helps name things within a shared context.
There's a book that Scott Berkin wrote called The Year Without Pants that's about his experience as a manager at Automattic, who are the developers of WordPress. And that company is 100% distributed. So you definitely don't have the conflict between the co-located workers and the remote workers, but you definitely do have the problem of trying to create a culture and a sense of teamwork. And one of the things that is characteristic of their culture is this informality that you're talking about. They have a great time. From what I can tell, they basically are communicating mostly asynchronously. So it's mostly over the equivalent of Slack. I think they actually use Slack now, but at the time you wrote the book, they weren't. So you can basically kind of joke around, and the whole process of communicating with the employees, even though they're dealing with very specific, serious stuff, bugs in the software and projects they need to develop, it's done with a lot of humor, a lot of tongue in cheek, a lot of wry quality in the way they communicate. And it seems like it's been very, very effective in developing a really functional remote culture there. Is that how things are at Trello? Is that what you recommend?
It's exactly the same. And I would absolutely recommend it. I was fortunate enough to learn that from coming to Trello. I had a more removed formal remote experience at previous companies, but Trello in particular really values the relationship building and the concept of bringing your whole self to work, that more informal approach, open approach is really important because you need to remember that everyone is a human on the other side of the screen. So we spend a lot of time investing in that social side of work. Mm-hmm. We always say that it's your job to build personal connections, or it's absolutely acceptable and expected to do that on work time. So taking time to have one-on-ones, meetings with coworkers that you don't need to talk about work, just informal. We organize a lot of events. Some are mandatory, some are, come if you'd like to come, that are fun events. We're going to do pumpkin carving next week.
Cool.
We send out kits and swag boxes to the team, and then do unboxings together to try and create, moments that we can share.
Is this something that you do, like this pumpkin carving thing? Is this your specific content marketing team, or is this the whole company's doing this?
This is our marketing team.
Okay.
Our HR team also supports remote activities across the board. Mm-hmm. I took a first aid class and infant CPR training last month. Yeah. I do yoga on Mondays and Wednesday afternoon over Zoom with folks on the team. We have a book club. We play video games like on the weekends. We do like Animal Crossing mini games and stuff like that. So we look to the fact that remote work allows you to have friends all over the world And we make sure to be very inclusive and open about that. And it's nice to see that that kind of naturally leads to social bonds on the team.
And Trello, you said, has co-located employees, right?
We do have co-located employees.
Like what percentage would you say of the company versus remote?
So Trello itself is about 70 remote, 30 co-located, 30%. Mm-hmm. And then we are one product within Atlassian, which is a larger org. 100% of people are working remotely right now.
Yeah, of course.
But then normally it's 70% or 60 to 70 in office, 30 to 40 remote.
And you think that's going to be changing over the next, you know, year or so, even once the pandemic is over?
Yes. Atlassian released a new policy called Team Anywhere, which gives every employee the choice to work either in an office or remotely.
So you want to get into this thing of being dependable, reliable, accountable, likable, and informal as a plan? Is that where you tend to head when you're talking about this?
Yeah, I think if you sat down with your team and you're like, all right, everyone, we need to be dependable, we need to be reliable, yeah, they would just roll their eyes and, you know, turn their video off and go and get a snack from the kitchen.
Right.
I think what we've done is broken it down into a framework that has three pillars. I really like frameworks, as I mentioned, because it creates a shared vocabulary and it works against and confronts biases. So it holds people accountable.
Okay.
There's three pillars to the framework. So picture a pyramid. The top of the pyramid is strategic visibility. So this is the work that you do to further your career advancement. So it's probably the more serious pull. Mm-hmm. On the bottom, we have two that support it that are on the foundation because they're equally important. One is social visibility. So this is the side of being likable and formal, working on those personal connections. And on the other side is supportive visibility. And this is about the importance of being a good teammate. And this comes down to the accessibility component.
Okay.
So with those three things, we say strategic visibility. Everyone has and uses their platform to show business value. Social visibility, we always say, constantly build personal connections. And yes, that is on work time. Supportive visibility, we say, always recognize and respond to the work of others.
That sounds like team building to me.
Yeah. So the function of this framework is to remind everyone that when we're remote, our tool set is our workspace. It's our digital office. So Slack, we use Confluence, which is like an open document-based wiki. We use Trello for projects, email a little bit. All of this, this is like the solar system of our digital office. So where are you putting pulses out and being seen? And how are you using those pulses to create a balance within this framework is essentially what we challenge everyone with.
So let's have an example of that.
Yeah. So let's talk about strategic visibility, because I think that's really important and something probably that people are starting to learn about. So this is about building an open concept digital office. The first pillar is being asynchronously accessible. So all your documents should be unlocked and mm-hmm. able to be found and made available for people to review.
And what does that do for you? Or what does that do for them? Either way.
It gives everybody an equal playing field, if you will, to review business decisions, have a chance to comment or provide a piece of feedback, and to stay up to date with the same shared context.
Okay.
It's really important to encourage a healthy comment culture. When all of your content is accessible and has the availability for commenting, it's like creating a really valuable hallway chatter and lunch table brainstorming around the work that you're doing.
So one obvious question about that is you get comments from people who may not have a clue of what the background is of the thing that you're posting publicly. Or do you? Or does that actually happen? Or do people just stay off of it?
It can happen. We call it seagulling.
Okay.
People swoop in and,
And poop on your stuff.
Thing on your stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
All of this is kind of centered against a set of core values of the company. Things like seek first to understand or assume positive intent. We have another one called open company, no bullshit, which is not a license to say whatever you want, but it's welcoming everyone to take a peek.
Right.
And we also have a really healthy documentation culture. So usually everything will have like backup resources and depth of information.
So if you want the context, you can get it.
If you want the context, you can get it. Everyone has the right to comment. Everyone has the right to accept or ignore the commentary. But you have to kind of tie it back to the physical office. So if you were in a meeting and you're presenting this or you're talking about it at the coffee maker, and it's like someone walking up, overhearing, pitching in their idea. You wouldn't just walk away and ignore them, or say outright, like, you're not allowed to comment on this. I didn't invite you into this circle.
Well, you might just smack them, but, you know, that would be immediate feedback.
Yeah, I mean, you might, but I don't know if I'd want to work there.
No, probably not. Okay.
So it's about thinking about those things that happen naturally in offices and trying to recreate them digitally. Another piece that I wanted to bring up here is just like how valuable the FaceTime is. So those moments when you do get to be in a Zoom meeting or a VC with leadership, it's really important to recognize those times and ensure that all team members get a chance to be seen in front of leadership. So you might want to have like a rotating meeting lead who leads through the action items in those, just so that they get a chance to talk and be visible. You might want to have a team member be the one who takes that good news to Slack and posts it. It's just reinforcing seeing your name, seeing your face. It's really important to give everybody a chance to do those things, because you'd be surprised at how easy it is to disappear when you don't comment on things. You're not that active in chat. You hide behind, your photo on Zoom. You can be invisible pretty quickly.
I'm sure that's totally true. And I think of my own probably more limited experience with this, but still it's the same thing of like, there always seems to be somebody who kind of dominates in a meeting, and you have to really be aware that other people have things to contribute and give them a moment to participate. And if they tend to be introverted or just, generally shy, it's hard for them to get a word in edgewise, and they might feel isolated and unheard, even if they're making hugely valuable contributions. So, all right, what other advice do you have for us?
Well, let's talk a little bit about supportive visibility. I think if we're all like, I mean, some of these things are just common sense, but I think if we're all wanting to advance our careers, we can't just like rush ahead on the strategy side and always be publishing the reports and leading the meetings. And there's also a very important component of being a good teammate.
Right.
We actually bake that into our performance reviews. So people are assessed on their performance for the year equally between their contributions and their function as a good team member.
As in basketball.
As in basketball, or I guess I'm in Canada, so we could say lacrosse.
Lacrosse, sure.
In hockey.
So can we, let's go into that for a second. One of the things that I know I've experienced, and I think is pretty universally true, is that the people who tend to hog the limelight lose trust. They lose trust among their own team members, and they also kind of lose trust among the people who notice what they're doing and feel that they're just being jerks, and they don't, like, that's not going to advance your career, even though you might think it is. So I expect that this balance is really important for people to understand. It's not about being the standout star all the time. It's a team effort. Companies are a team effort, and any activities that companies do are a team effort. You got to be part of it if it's going to work.
Yeah. And I always tell people too, the irony of being an outstanding performer is that if that leads you to management, in management, you're mostly supporting people, mm-hmm. finding resources, you know, protecting from stuff from the top down. You're not actually like leading in terms of being the top performer. You're now supporting staff almost mm-hmm. of the team.
There are so many successful people who credit their success to other people, and that's how they get to be as known and as successful as they are. And it's that principle, right? Giving people credit.
Giving people credit and supporting people. I think when you're working remotely, you don't get tapped on the shoulder. So it's really easy to like get down into your deep work and kind of block out what else is happening. And that includes the team, and that includes your team's work. So we really encourage people to take parts of their work week to read the work of others, to mm-hmm. dive in and stay up to date on what other people are doing. We call these digital receipts. So we encourage people to both create digital receipts and intake those digital receipts. And then for leadership, it's important to have a system of receipts, and so that you can acknowledge and like give virtual kudos mm-hmm. to your team mm-hmm. and give credit in an async manner. Because you could say like, great job in a meeting, and you know, like maybe there's five other people in the meeting and they hear it. But if you have it written down on like a Trello card on the company overview board, or you publish a blog every month where you point it out, then everybody gets to see it. And those kind of digital receipts are a lot more impactful.
And people can link to it, point to it. It makes them yep. feel special. And they are yep. special. They actually did the contribution you're lauding.
Yeah. And then everybody can do this on a micro level as well. So we always say, leave no one hanging. Mm-hmm. My like biggest pet peeve are people who ask a question in Slack or share a link or something that they think is important, and it's crickets. Mm. Nobody responds. Nobody mm-hmm. answers.
Yeah.
It's like it's an awful feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. As a content marketer, the worst thing is you put something out there and there's no comments and no views. It's like, what happened? So
you get up yeah. from your desk and you go and make a cup of tea, and you're all in your head wondering, did I do something wrong? Did yeah. I say the wrong thing? Is nobody at their desks? Like, what's going on?
Right. Yep.
So
sure.
we have the team rule to just acknowledge it. So, I mean, emoji reactions were probably like one of the best feature releases in Slack, because it's mm-hmm. really easy. Just give a thank you, a hand clap, a thumbs up if you want.
Right.
Just something. Just tell them you're there.
I can't remember who does this, but somebody suggested, even if you are not doing something that's that cheerleadery, just having, using the little eyeballs that just say, I looked at this. Is a good thing. It's like, oh, okay. You know, somebody's reading this. This is good.
It's the perceived proximity. You register. Oh, they're accessible. That's a reliable reaction I can expect from my team. They have my back.
So perceived proximity is an interesting thing to go back to for a second. One of the things is being present on video calls. And I've certainly had the experience when these things happen and somebody, especially now, is taking care of their kid. They're like, you know, they're homeschooling their kid. The kid is running around. They haven't had a chance to put their makeup on. They're like maybe still in their pajamas. And this is all, you know, stuff is happening all around them. And my experience of that personally is extreme tolerance. It's like, I know people have kids. I know people have lives. And I don't mind if, you know, their kid is whispering to them on the side while we're talking once in a while. It's like, that's just how it goes. You know, that's humanity. But in a more corporate environment, I think there's an expectation that when you're at work, you are dressed and ready to go. And if you're not, then somehow you're a slacker. And tell me about how that works in real life in Trello or anywhere else.
So first of all, I think I've said this like 1,000 times since March. Working from home during a pandemic is not remote work. It's close, but it's not the same.
Yeah, right. Way less control.
Way less control. So like you said, I mean, we're in a space right now where there needs to be an extreme added dose of empathy, an understanding. And actually, it's probably better for building that informality and that likability, because you get to see the CEO with his kids coming in during the meeting.
Yep, exactly.
And it really helps to break down some of those corporate barriers. So first of all, I mean, if you want to look at a small bright side, I think it's probably helped us get over some of these unnecessary walls in corporate culture. But a few things that Trello has done for years being remote that have really helped build a system of reliability that's flexible is that, and this isn't for everyone, but we have overlap hours. Mm-hmm. So we have 3 hours a day that are our overlap hours. They're the best, I guess, hours for all time zones. So it's between 9 a.m. And noon. And during those hours, that's when it's okay to book a meeting. That's when you should be able to get a fairly quick response if you have a question. That's when usually chat is pretty busy. Mm-hmm. And then outside of those overlap hours, people have the flexibility to look after the kids, you know, take a break, work later. So we have a bit of expectation plus a bit of flexibility, and that's what's worked really well for us.
That sounds like a good plan. And you've got people in 24 hours worth of time zones. So
yes,
that sounds like that might be okay for half the world, but half the world is probably asleep during that time. So do people in India have to be up in the middle of the night to do this?
No. Okay. I should caveat, that's our marketing team. So our marketing team runs from Spain to, well, the West Coast.
Okay.
So that works for us. And then the folks in Sydney, I think that, you know, they would choose their own overlap hours. So yeah. I think when you're talking about corporations, it's really important, I think, for corporations to give a lot of ownership to the individual teams and let them choose what they need. Because I think top-down policy at a high level is good, but in specifics, it's not going to work for everyone.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. Well, can we talk a moment about your personal working from home setup? So, because you've been doing this a while, so you probably have a good setup in your home. Do you? Or is it still a struggle?
I do. No, I've been curating the optimal remote work experience for a few years. I graduated from a kitchen table to a desk in a bedroom. I now have a dedicated office.
Congratulations. Yes.
Thank you. I felt like I gave myself a promotion with my office. Mm-hmm. I've converted from a kind of standard desk to a sit-stand desk.
Nice.
So I have the ability to kind of work the way I feel comfortable. I've brought in a few corporate accessories. I got a whiteboard.
Woo.
I like to recommend a whiteboard. It's really nice to stand up and doodle when you're trying to think.
Yeah.
And a few other sensory inputs that I think are, you might as well, you're at home. I have like a fragrance diffuser. I have a record player.
Like for vinyl?
For vinyl.
Nice.
I give this tip to people when they say that they get like tired of sitting. The best part about a vinyl record is one side plays for about half an hour.
Right.
So every time the record finishes playing, you need to get up and go and change it.
Yes. Do not get a turntable with a changer, right?
Yeah. Stay, okay. Stay pretty analog. Get a cheap record player and you'll do your exercise for the day.
I got to stop using Spotify, I guess. Okay. It's great. Good. And a lot of people don't have their own office and they are working out of their bedrooms. And in this current environment where those people have to be on Zoom and essentially reveal their little abode that they might not want to have be part of their corporate image, you know, you have any thoughts about that for people?
Well, probably should thank the product development team at Zoom for developing virtual backgrounds.
Yes.
I think that has been one of the best equalizers for folks working remotely.
Do you find people using them a lot?
Yeah.
Because I've heard some pushback about that from some people.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I wouldn't say that we have any biases towards them or people feel uncomfortable. We've made a lot of them. We made like a custom Zoom pack
Oh, cool.
for our users that we like to use as well. So we often are making them, or if we make a funny one, we'll kind of distribute it around the company for people to use, kind of like an inside joke. So mm-hmm. we've had some fun with them.
That's great. I like that idea of like encouraging people to do it, because then if people don't feel weird, they can just go ahead and use them. And they're, we had a, this is a side note, but I'm on the board of the American Institute of Graphic Arts in Los Angeles. And one of our board members started using Zoom backgrounds that were these gorgeous art pieces, I guess he downloaded from a museum site. And so you'd be talking to him and there'd be, you know, a fantastic like Paul Klee abstract behind him or some other gorgeous thing. And it was such an elegant and really nice way of doing it that it was like, I look forward to his next Zoom background. It's like, what are you going to do now? You know, it was great.
And see, it's also good for a person who's in a leadership position like that to be doing it, because that's how it equalizes. I mean, if mm-hmm. only the people who want to hide their bed are using it, it that doesn't work. But right. Everyone should use it.
Sounds like you could go on for hours on this topic. So if you have something else specific that we missed, I'd love to hear about it.
I kind of ask people to think, like in the article I wrote and the presentation that I do on this topic, is when you're remote, like I said, your tool set is your workspace. So it's your digital office. So you kind of have to just ask, does it feel like a great place to work? Think about, what are those interactions in the office that you enjoy? Maybe it's water cooler talk, or it's lunches with the team, or the chance to be in person and learn from guest speakers. All of those things can be replicated digitally. And it doesn't hurt to add a little bit of structure to how you think and plan about that until you get comfortable and it becomes a natural part of your company culture.
That sounds like excellent advice. So tell people where they can find out more. Where can they contact you online?
Well, Twitter is my home base. So you can find me at Leah Ryder, LEAHRYDER. The link to my newsletter is there. You can see all of my work from Trello there, or you can send me a message.
That's great. I will put links to some of the stuff we talked about in the show notes. And I just want to say thank you for doing this. It's been really fun.
Thank you. I can talk about remote work all day, so I appreciate it.
Well, hopefully maybe you can do this again.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for now. If you're new to working from home, you might want to check out worklifeathome.com, where you'll find articles, show notes, and, best of all, a community where you can ask questions and get some answers from people who've been doing this a while. We'd love to see you there. And I would be thrilled to hear what you think and find out who else you'd like to hear from on the show. You can email me at josh@worklifeathome.com. If you're enjoying Work Life at Home, please do let your friends and coworkers know so they can subscribe. Thank you for listening. We'll be back soon.